listening in on lawyers, and then, of course, you talked about private and public here. And I think one of the strengths of Meat of the Book is we all think about NSA and we all think about, you know, FBI. But in fact, I think the figure you give is something like 70% or 80% of intelligence gathering, spying and otherwise, is done by private corporations. Can you just elaborate on that a little bit? That's incredible to me. And there's companies like Stratfor, which was a private security intelligence company, that the one that Jeremy Hammond hacked into. But there's many more in the book like that. So just give us some sense of how you got into that field, because no one really has been talking that much about it. I mean, NSA stuff has begun to bring that out.
Well, I've always been interested in cooperation between municipal public police, for example, and private security organizations. And we all know that Pinkerton detective investigators decades ago were very involved in law enforcement functions. But I think in the 70s, we saw really a heightened cooperation between local and federal police, really relying on cooperation with private security organizations. Why that was troublesome to me is that there are no regulations or standards. A lot of private security guards are grossly underpaid, may receive only a couple of hours of training. Some may carry weapons with them. And there have been a lot of lawsuits over the years, for example, at retail establishments where guards may stop individuals improperly, or at bars where they have a bouncer and there's an overreaching response. And also a confusion, which I think is important, a confusion especially when police engage in so-called moonlighting. I saw, for example, the NYPD had officers in uniform carrying weapons guarding Barnes & Noble bookstore at Union Square, and they do that. And I asked the store person, why are they here? And she said it makes people feel safer. It cuts down on people coming in off the street and, I guess, stealing or whatever. But to me, that confusion blurs the lines between private and public sectors. And I think now that we're seeing it on such a grand scale in conducting our intelligence, we're seeing an entire industry really giving birth to, as you say, Stratfor and other intelligence organizations that exist just to conduct intelligence, be it on activists or critics of corporate and government policies, as well as defense contractors beefing up and creating a whole sector of intelligence. They are in big contracts with the U.S. government. One of the problems constitutionally is that they're not held as private businesses to the same strictures of the U.S. Constitution. So that, as we saw recently with the Hemisphere program revelations, we have our government paying AT&T staff to sit next to sheriffs and drug enforcement officers, basically to go through AT&T's files that go back 26 years to look for information related to criminal investigations, but they're not overseen by a judge. They're the fruit of...
Say that again, because what you said was incredible, that they AT&T actually is paid, their employees are paid to sit with law enforcement, right?
Exactly.
Heidi Boghossian has recently written, and we urge everybody to get it, Spying on Democracy: Government Surveillance, Corporate Power, and Public Resistance. It's a beautiful book. City Lights put it out.
Heidi was answering a question. I forgot what the question
Hemisphere.
Was.
Hemisphere. What's happened is our government is paying, we just found out thanks to a New York Times story, paying AT&T employees, and that's our tax dollars going to pay private industry to sit next to sheriffs and drug enforcement agents to look for, through telephone records that go back as far as 26 years.
How many billion records do they keep?
4 billion records a day. So you do the math. It's a lot. It's, I think, far greater in scope in many ways than what we've been learning about NSA spying. And my question is, how many other agencies of the government are doing this? Because as with the DEA, they're getting access to this information through what are called administrative subpoenas. They do not need to go before a judge and get a warrant. And therefore, many could say these are unconstitutional, vast searches and seizures of information about our private communications. And it's worth noting that the Inspector General of the Department of Justice a couple of years ago criticized the FBI's use of administrative subpoenas and said they were being used in an abusive fashion using the justification of the war on terror to issue them.
You know, Heidi, there's some wonderful little details in here, and then I want to go back to a big one. Tell me something. Next time I look at, like, someone dressed in really good clothes in a shop window, because I stop and see, you know, I want to get a nice jacket for court, or you might want to get a nice jacket for court. What happens when you look at a mannequin in the window? Is that looking at a doggy in the window?
That's one of the unusual new developments. I have not encountered one myself, I don't think. But many mannequins have small cameras embedded in the eyeballs that can watch you. And I think that those of us who see surveillance cameras and know they take many different shapes and forms, and we know that, for example, drones are being developed in the shape of butterflies or birds or mosquitoes even, have to realize that with such sophisticated technology, it's sort of like, you know, get smart. There can be small cameras in a pen, in any implement that we use on a daily basis. So we don't really know the extent to which we're being watched.
Yeah, but there are cameras all over New York City, just like
everywhere.
There are in London. Yeah.
Exactly.
This is one they have this, you're staring in the face. And of course, it could be used for lots of reasons.
Right.
How many, are models working well? Are they dressed well? You know, whatever.
Right.
Whatever. But you know, I want to give people some sense of the breadth of the book. First of all, it's a very easy to read book. And it's very accessible with lots of good stories about how the surveillance is working from the time kids were sent home with computers from their school that actually could, the cameras could be turned on so the school could watch the kids, to the mannequin story you just heard, to other stories which we'll get to about the bikes in New York City, about the labor organizing my son does down for Coalition of Immokalee Workers and what happened there. But let's just give a sense of the overview. It's a dozen, how many chapters altogether, Heidi? It's 13 chapters plus the conclusion, and it includes everything from what happened with the arrests of critical mass in New York City and the spying on that bike group, going down through putting spies into political groups, and to origins of where a lot of the spying took place, to what's happening with what Heidi calls green squads, you know, everything from the green movement to animal rights movement, to spying on the press, which is, I think, maybe what we'll talk about next, private contracting, the eyes above. You know, they used to call the people who parachuted down and killed you death from above in the Army. Now they look at everything you do. It's celestial eyes, Heidi calls it. And then, of course, which we'll get to, the fight back. But Heidi, I saw you pointing to spying on the press. So let's talk about your chapter on spying on the press.
Well, because the title is Spying on Democracy, I think spying on the press really gets to the heart of what we're talking about. All of this surveillance, be it corporate government and the joining of the two, has a chilling effect on free speech, because when you know you're being monitored, even in outdoor situations, it tends to change the way you communicate with others. And I think that we've seen under the Obama administration the crackdown on journalists' threat of charges of espionage or conspiracy with confidential sources. When you are spying on the Fourth Estate, as it's called, which is intended to be a watchdog on government, you really get to the heart of what democracy is about. And without a free press, we don't have any chance of preserving those fundamental freedoms of First Amendment association and ability to bring our grievances to the government for redress. In that chapter, I talk about the Hewlett-Packard scandal.
Oh, that was a great one.
Yeah,
right.
The use of so-called pretexting.
That one.
Right.
Like, I know